it's true that the economy was better under Trump for the first 3 years, but that's because the Republican Congress let him spend money when they wouldn't let Obama spend money for 8 years.
Hello, and welcome to the More Freedom Foundation podcast. I am your co-host, Rory McElhone, joined by the host, Robert Morris.
Hello, Rory. How's it going?
Not the best day. A bit hectic at work. Didn't sleep well. How are you?
Similar. Hectic day. Didn't sleep very well. We're similarly irritable, which means we're well prepared for the topic of today's episode, which is
do you want another 4 irritable years?
Indeed. It is the presidency of Donald Trump, which it's becoming clear to me, unfortunately, we need something of a reminder of.
Is he going to be the next Cleveland?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. I think only once in U.S. history has a U.S. president come back for 2 non-consecutive terms. The first of those being Grover Cleveland between, I think his second term was 1892 to 96, then I think 84 to 88, I believe.
Arthur, then Cleveland, then Harrison, then Cleveland, and then McKinley.
Yeah, which we discussed in our last podcast episode. More interesting than you might think. That would be very bad. I think that it's probably about time, this will be coming out in late March of 2024, to point out that despite my loathing for Joe Biden and some of the horrific war crimes he's been committing, I do in fact believe it would be worse if Donald Trump would be president. And I've been having conversations in my personal life with people, some of whom, with people I really respect their opinions, and some people I respect a little bit less, who have been saying, how could it be worse? Let's just go with Donald Trump. And I think we know how it would be worse. I think it's really crucial. And being forgotten or being perhaps avoided as a trauma response, I do want to say that a lot of this episode owes a lot to another podcast episode that I will mention after this.
I thought you were going to say a lot of this episode is going to be therapy for you.
In part. Like, am I nuts here? But a lot of the reason why Joe Biden's presidency has been unsatisfactory, leaving aside the genocide, to a lot of Americans is because of a catastrophe that Donald Trump created with some help from the Chinese Communist Party's mismanagement in the initial weeks of the COVID catastrophe. But we had a solid year of Donald Trump obscenely mismanaging the COVID catastrophe as the most important person in the world for dealing with the U.S. president, for dealing with an unprecedented worldwide catastrophe. Donald Trump was an abomination. And it was specifically a episode of the Chris Hayes podcast.
Okay.
I think Why Is This Happening? Where he interviewed a guy named, I think, Eric Klinenberg, who has written a book on 2020. So yeah, I just wanted to name check that podcast on 2020. 2020, the year everything changed, with Eric Klinenberg. This is a Why Is This Happening? The Chris Hayes podcast. Very worth listening to. And the point that they make there is that a lot of people seem to be pretending or believing that Joe Biden was president in 2020.
Oh.
That's not actually what happened. We are not, in fact, in this very uncomfortable state, this traumatized state, this period of everybody just kind of reckoning with government failure on a scale we hadn't seen since perhaps the Nixon impeachment, with Watergate in the 1970s. It wasn't, in fact, Joe Biden that was president for that. It was Donald effing Trump. And it really, I'd recommend that Chris Hayes podcast, because they just sort of emphasize, like, yeah, it was Donald Trump that was the president, and we're all kind of so traumatized by 2020 and just don't want to think about 2020 and are still kind of shocked by how badly all of that was handled in 2020 at every level. But, the president's in charge, and the buck stops with the president.
So just to run it over, because I know it's one of those periods of time, because of COVID, it sort of feels like it was just yesterday, but also an eternity away. So he was the 45th president from 2017 to 2021.
Yes. Yes. So that whole first COVID year, and remember that it's called COVID-19 because it arose in 2019. Because already the international medical establishment was aware enough of it in 2019 that a competent U.S. president or a non-obstructive U.S. president could have been taking actions to ameliorate that. In fact, we live still in an international system that is entirely reliant on U.S. leadership. And in 2020, there was none.
Why do you think the Republican Party was almost, I know it sounds silly to say anti-COVID, but because, you know, nobody likes COVID, but why do you think they sort of put their head in the sand and then kind of didn't want to believe it and then tried to act like everything was fine? And then instead of just sort of going, here's something we have no control over, this has happened from another country, let's just cope with it the best, hunker down and wait it out.
To some degree, the United States is a polarized country, and it is, you know, people are going to politicize frickin' everything. But that cannot exonerate Donald Trump, who made that, you know, his approach from the get-go. You know, he never wanted to do anything about COVID other than hide the fact that it was happening. He openly dissimulated. You know, he openly talked about wanting
to... Was he taking it like a personal insult? Like, oh, this couldn't happen because I'm in charge and I'm so wonderful.
He thought it was a distraction. He thought it was a personal insult that it was happening, and it must have been the media, and it must have been the... And in his defense, he absolutely had to deal with an antagonistic media and a lot of... You know, I hate Donald Trump, but I absolutely believe that the... It was a Russia hoax, the pursuit of him over meaningless, BS, because the, you know, from Hillary Clinton to whatever elite you want to pick, you know, didn't want to focus on their decades of failure that had led to Donald Trump as a reaction. They wanted to pretend it was Russia. I mean, there's a lot of, at no point am I here to defend the Democratic Party, least of all Genocide Joe, but I would rather vote for genocide than vote for the kind of leadership that we had under Donald Trump. And that is not something I say lightly. That's just what it is.
I can't really see Trump helping the Israel-Palestine conflict.
No, not at all.
Because it's not like he's completely against it, like he's sort of very against Ukraine. It's not like we have an option there. It feels almost just like the same or possibly even worse.
Well, and it's important, and to move beyond the topic of the Chris Hayes podcast, I think there's plenty more to say about 2020 specifically and his failings there. But the entirety of the Trump presidency was a disaster. There is a permanent government in the United States. There is a foreign policy establishment that is constantly looking for death and destruction, that has no interest other than bombing, bombing, bombing. The traditional constraint on that, one of the reasons why the George W. Bush presidency was so damaging was that we did not have that constraint. Traditional constraint on that is a few members of the U.S. Congress, sadly not many, and a U.S. president that actually has some responsibility to the U.S. people and the U.S. voters and does not want war and destruction. What is a tremendously underemphasized aspect of the Trump administration is that, in part certainly because of the way that the Democratic Party and the cable news establishment was weaponized by the permanent pro-war government with this Russia hoax nonsense, but also due to Trump's almost complete incapacity to do anything else other than whine about the media, we didn't have a president. We didn't have any Democratic restraints on the permanent government. I think what people imagine, the greatest misconception that can make people think that Donald Trump presidency might be a good thing is that he wasn't president during 2020 and that, like, COVID is somehow Joe Biden's fault. The second greatest is that he was in any way an anti-war president. What happens during a presidency is what happens during a presidency. And the fact is that this was the most viciously anti-Russia. Like, we declared war on Russia in 2017 or 2018. Specifically, I'm talking about the CATSA sanctions. Russia is, you know, the military-industrial complex is tremendously influential in the United States, despite the fact that it's actually not a very large part of the U.S. economy. I mean, it's large. It's like 5-6%. That's a lot of money. That is billions upon billions of dollars. But it has outsized power because of, frankly, because of, you know, the mythology that government doesn't do anything other than defense. So that's all the government has done. So the United States has this military-industrial complex that's important or whatnot. Russia just is a military-industrial complex. It is security services.
And Gazprom.
And it's got nukes, and it's got a space program. And of course, there's oil and gas as well. But so imagine if the United States was nothing other than the military-industrial complex in Texas. That's what Russia is. And with the CATSA sanctions, I can't remember if it was 2017, I think it was 2017 or 2018, the United States basically said, the Russian military-industrial complex isn't allowed to sell weapons to anybody, But we will sanction any country in the world. That's tremendous, tremendous aggression. That is basically the U.S. government under Donald Trump decided to treat Russia the way that we heretofore only treated Syria or Iran. We really just murderous sanctions. It was a huge question whether we were going to sanction India over this, and we ended up not sanctioning India because we have some basic strategic thought left. But we were talking about sanctioning Europe. We sanctioned Turkey. We sanctioned China for buying Russian military stuff.
Yeah, was it the S-400?
Yeah. So we essentially went to war against Russia under Donald Trump. We heavily armed Ukraine. We encouraged Ukraine to abandon all the negotiations with Russia. Like, Joe Biden, if he hadn't been murdered over withdrawing from Afghanistan, might have been able to do more to stop that war.
But also, Trump tried to leave Afghanistan, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Trump talked about leaving Afghanistan. Trump talked about leaving Syria. Trump talked about, I think in his last weeks, Trump did pull some troops out of Somalia, which were promptly moved right back in the second he was out of power.
Oh.
Donald Trump talked a good game, said a lot of useful things. He also said a lot of absolutely risible nonsense. He also, he was a chaos actor. There was nothing that he added. There is an economic story here that is worth discussing that I think gets kind of mentioned. The fact is that the first 3 years of the Trump presidency were probably, for a lot of Americans at the top and the bottom, maybe not so much in the middle, were some of the best economic years that they had experienced in a decade. And that's what people remember. That people are like, the economy was good under Trump.
It's the economy, stupid.
And the economy was good under Trump for 3 out of 4 years until, of course, the 2020 catastrophe. But it's worth interrogating. It's worth looking into why the economy was good. The economy was good because Donald Trump was spending like a drunken sailor. Deficit, which was absolutely exploded under the first years of Obama because of the financial crisis that George W. Bush had created, was steadily crushed down and down and down and down over the course of the Obama administration, both because the Republicans forced him to and because a lot of Obama's Democratic economic advisors believed that austerity was necessary, that we had to stop spending money. And because of that, United States, the majority of people in the United States, not the people who own stocks and bonds, not the investor class, but pretty much everyone else in the United States really suffered, like just sort of never recovered from the 2008 financial crisis until the Trump administration, because Donald Trump got into power. We got a Republican in power for the first time. And then all of a sudden, the Republican Congress was like, spend whatever you want. And it's simple Keynesianism. And I guess that it's true that the economy was better under Trump for the first 3 years, but that's because the Republican Congress let him spend money when they wouldn't let Obama spend money for 8 years. That's a pretty straightforward thing that I. So we're supposed to endorse Republican hostage taking is sort of the thesis for voting for Trump on that basis here, and I don't really buy that.
But did also a lot of people not benefit from like stimulus packages from during COVID, which they also remember?
Yes, that's a very good point. There were definitely big stimulus packages under Trump, but there were also big stimulus packages under Biden. But no, I think that is a very valid point. But the stimulus packages would not need to be as large as they were, nor would there need to have been stimulus packages under Biden if Donald Trump hadn't destroyed the world, which is, I think, a really key part of this COVID story that is just not emphasized, is the extent to which the United States was the super spreader of all super spreaders, not just China and Taiwan and South Korea, not just the Asian countries. There's not a cultural argument here, but like New Zealand, Australia, actually most of Europe managed to a lesser extent than Australia and New Zealand, managed to do a pretty good job with things like contact tracing, with testing, test and trace, actually shutting down things. The United States did not. The United States was never serious. I actually had a buddy of mine be like, what are you talking about? We shut things down for 2 weeks. That's true. That's really all we ever did across the United States. I think for a month, if you had a Democratic governor, maybe a month or two in some places, but kind of indifferently observed. I lived in New York City and Michigan during that COVID year. And by the summer in Michigan, I mean, people were wearing masks at the expense of restaurants. Meanwhile, the rest of the world, they were like, restaurants? What would it be, restaurants? And then if you go to the hardware store in Michigan in, May of 2020, nobody's wearing a mask. I loved being in Michigan during the spring and summer of 2020 because I could go to movies, New York.
We just didn't do anything for a year, it seemed.
Yeah, exactly. And if the United States, and that's the nightmarish thing, Rory, was that if the United States had just not done anything for 2 months, the rest of the world wouldn't have had to have shut down for a year. So basically it was a year of the rest of the world being like, oh, wow, the United States isn't going to do anything. And they're not going to stop sending planes our way.
Yeah.
And our economies are entirely dependent on the United States, not in just the U.S. is the big market and the big economy. No, like European, Japanese, even Chinese central banks were only still functioning. China didn't have swap lines, but a whole bunch of other, like, we're only still functioning because of the Federal Reserve of the United States. Like, the empire, I can't imagine what it must have been like to be in, like, the public health authority in Australia or Italy or China and be like, oh, the United States just isn't going to do any of the things that we did. Everyone's going to die anyway. And it's a horror that I feel like I'm on crazy pills when I talk about this because it's just completely gone. In the United States, we now just congratulate ourselves like, ooh, didn't we get vaccines quicker than everybody? And it's like, yeah, but like millions died because the United States, specifically Donald Trump, decided that COVID was something that was going to be over by Easter. Do you remember that? That was actually he said.
Weirdly, Boris Johnson seemed to be in the same boat. It was like, Trump basically says, oh, this will come and it will pass. Which is like, I guess that's true.
And that Donald Trump's policy became the world's COVID policy. It just boggles the mind that like it is not more of a focus, is not something that people are more conscious of and more horrified by. The extent to which this effing guy managed to break the world. And it's just not, it's COVID, like a lot of things, was an opportunity. It was the entire world struggling against one thing together. It could have been an opportunity for
an extraordinary rise, and it was actually, it was just across borders, across cultures, the same enemy, the same focus. You know, we've talked about how much of U.S. politics is just desperate for an enemy, desperate for somebody we can fight against so we can, like, you know, start being decent to each other again. And, like, COVID was that, it was that, and not just for the United States, but for the entire freaking world. And Donald Trump was like, you're screwing with my stock market.
It's also the fact he looked really good in a mask.
Oh, did he?
He always looked like, you know, Shredder. He just had a, like, oh, really? A kind of, I don't know, he had this black mask, like a presidential mask, yeah. And it's like, well, he actually looks pretty good in this. And then it was like, take that off and put on my horrible, weird makeup.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always better to not be looking at Donald Trump's face.
So, is it true that Fox was basically, you know, on stage saying, "Oh, COVID's not real," blah blah blah, and then behind the scenes they were taking it incredibly serious?
Yes, I think that, I believe that's true. The sort of culturally, Fox News is down on the News Corp headquarters is down in the 50s on 6th Avenue in New York City. I mean, they took it very seriously. They all took their vaccines. They all wore their masks. I got a buddy who works there. But they didn't go into work for a year or two.
Worked from home.
But of course, that's not the message that they were pumping out. Even from Trump's political perspective, like, good God, if Donald Trump had, and Steve Bannon wanted him to do this, one of the more interesting dynamics that they name check on that Chris Hayes podcast and has been observed by many is that, in fact, in part because they didn't want to talk about the impeachment that was going on at that point, and there was a China angle, you could blame China. Steve Bannon, Hugh Hewitt, all kinds of right-wing ideologues are like, what is this China virus? You know, what's going on? Like, they were actually ahead of the curve talking about that. And if Donald Trump had just been like, you know what I can do here? And he actually did do this. He did use COVID as an excuse to shut down the border through a policy that Joe Biden kept, I think, until like last year. He really could have used COVID and taking COVID seriously as a cover for any kind of authoritarian or just decent and useful political agenda he might have had. He could have used that to march right through to re-election in November. I think eventually that ended up not being the case. But in the initial flush, and this initial flush lasting certainly into November 2020, most heads of state did pretty well out of COVID. It actually, you know, gave them great legitimacy. It had a country pulling together or whatnot.
Well, similar to like you're in a war, like, you know, all the other parties will rally behind you for this, you know, moment of need.
And Donald Trump simply did not know how to function in that environment. He had no concept of how to lead a unified United States of America.
It's almost as if he had never worked in politics before.
Well, there's that. but not to say that he's a bad politician. It's just that his particular politics are exclusively the politics of destruction and negativity.
Well, he's great at campaigning.
Yeah.
And once he's in office, it would be nice just to tone him down a bit.
Well, he's a man who campaigns against throughout his time in power. He's not campaigning for or anything. He's anti. He is anti everything. I talked about this in 2020, and I think the key thing about Donald Trump is that he proved for the first 3 years that you don't really need a president for much. That, like, the United
They're
States...
They're really a figurehead in a lot of ways?
In a lot of ways. The United States can really just sort of function, sort of continue to tick over with, you know, not just a non-entity, but like an actively malign and destructive entity.
Anti-entity.
An anti-entity, like Donald Trump in power, who's just so, because he was so incompetent and so incapable of actually pushing anything through, you know, he wasn't actually doing that much real damage. He was just fighting with Rachel Maddow for 3 years. And things went okay. The amount of money that the Congress was spending circulated through the economy well. The tax cuts probably didn't hurt too much, though it's hard to demonstrate the positive effects that they had, other than on, you know, making the deficit bigger. Things went pretty well. And then in his fourth year as president in 2020, he demonstrated beyond any shadow of a doubt that sometimes you really, 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 really need a president. And we did not have one.
Well, sadly, if he had have done a lot of, he just implemented things that were already in place. If they had have went, oh, we have a plan for a pandemic.
Yep.
And he just went, good work, do that, I'll wear my mask, everyone sit at home.
Giving credit where I hate to give credit, the George W. Bush administration was very good on pandemic preparedness. They put together a whole Bible and a, you know, if this, do this procedures that should have been followed.
Mm-hmm.
The Obama administration, I don't know if they freshened that up, but they knew what they were supposed to do there. And I think there was actually some description of this, you know, during the transition, the Obama people sort of handed over the binders or whatever, described what was supposed to be done, the procedures to be taken, and they were utterly abandoned. People talk about Operation Warp Speed a lot, which is good that we got vaccines fairly quickly. But Operation Warp Speed was more than just that. It was an entire, like, infrastructure for managing pandemic response that came about in May of 2020 that was basically a replacement president. And it's great that Jared Kushner, whoever, realized that, we don't have a functioning president, so we need to put a different architecture in place. If anybody else had been president, we would have had a president in January, when it would have been useful, or February would have been incredibly useful. The United States didn't start taking this disease seriously until March.
Well, I think that's what a lot of the world did as well. Well, a lot of Europe, I know, did.
Well, yeah, in part because Europe at that point had already, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, it's hard to believe, but in the second decade of this century, and a number of decades before that, was among the most respected institutions on the planet. It was seen as a tremendously savvy, the people to go to. And as COVID was developing, Europe, the rest of the world were like, well, if this were a big problem, the United States would be taking it seriously.
Okay.
And it manifestly was not at the orders of Donald Trump and people that Donald Trump had appointed.
Did America influence the World Health Organization? Because it was seen that it was like, basically listening to the Chinese propaganda, not raising the flag soon enough. Like, could America made it hurry up and kind of take this more seriously earlier on in those early months of 2020?
What could
the World Health Organization, because they still were like, oh, it's not a pandemic yet, and they felt like they were dragging their heels in the early months. Like, if America had have taken it more serious, do you think that could have kickstarted it and then made the whole world think, oh, this is important?
No question. Like, I don't want to pretend like everything was hunky-dory and everybody did great other than Donald Trump. That's not true. But Donald Trump was the president of the United States of America, and it's a Hillary Clinton campaign against Obama. I think it's like, who do you want to be there to answer the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that? And Donald Trump really conclusively answered the question that it's not Donald Trump. you don't want Donald Trump answering that phone. The political context that Donald Trump had created was largely pointless, but very authentically hostile interaction between China and the United States. In that context, China was definitely a lot less interested in transparency with international institutions, and without U.S. backup for the World Health Organization, I think that the World Health Organization had to do a delicate balance where, in order to get any kind of access to China to figure out what is actually going on with this disease, to attempt to fight what is going on with that disease, they needed to play politics with the Chinese government. In the context that Donald Trump had created of hostility between the United States and the Chinese government, that Chinese government was more prickly and more likely to do what they did, and not to defend what they did, which was hide things for longer than they should have. And pressure the World Health Organization to keep things from being defined appropriately as early as they should. Had the United States played a larger role, had Donald Trump allowed the institutions from the United States that wanted to play a larger role, late 2019, early 2020, I believe it would be a very different world today. One of the saddest things about that podcast with Chris Hayes is the way that He talks about how countries that manage to pull together and do things right, in some respects, if not, are healthier, you know, just stronger polities, like have a healthier political soul, for lack of a better term, in the aftermath of COVID. Whereas in the United States, and yeah, I'm sure Hillary Clinton would have been divisive in her own ways. But it is a sad fact that it's hard to imagine how she could have done worse than Donald Trump. It really is like another Watergate moment in the U.S. Like the Watergate moment is famous for, you know, Richard Nixon proving that a president could be so dishonest and really crushing a lot of people's illusions about government, and that being like a really big part of like how we got into the Reagan era or whatever. COVID in some places built a lot of trust for government, built a lot of societal solidarity. And in the United States, it did the opposite because of Donald Trump. So everybody dealt with worldwide, everybody had to deal with inflation because of COVID and what it did to supply chains. The United States has experienced horrific rises in crime, has experienced horrific rises in just vehicular deaths. More people are just angrier and sadder and more likely to crash their cars into things.
Since COVID?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I'm just to give a bit of context, I'm on the New York Times website here. So yeah, 1.3 million deaths, is that, from COVID?
That's the United States.
Yeah,
right?
In the United States.
So everybody in the world has experienced this inflation thing. It's only the United States that has seen this spike in murders. It's only the United States that has seen this spike in road deaths. And yeah, like it's made a unhappier, more screwed up country. And I understand why everybody's angry at Joe Biden. There are a lot of really great reasons to be angry at Joe Biden. And honestly, Nikki Haley, I'd probably be, I'd still be doing nasty podcasts about Nikki Haley, but I don't know, Tim Scott. I mean, there are Republicans who could be running against Joe Biden who I would...
But there are a lot more like normal Republican human beings. Like Donald Trump is just his own unique, bizarre creature.
Exactly. Considering what Joe Biden is doing to the Middle East right now, I would not be doing a podcast like this about a sane Republican. Donald Trump is not a sane human being. Donald Trump is not a sensible alternative for this country. I think we will be hammering this message more as the months wear on. But it is shocking to me that people are even contemplating putting this man back in office. It would be such a bad idea. Really.
Why do you think so many Republicans took to him? Because we were talking about William McKinley in the last episode, and he's one that a lot have forgotten about. When he was like a war hero, he did expand the American empire. He brought in the gold standard, while Donald Trump's a draft-dodging mummy's boy who managed to feel like he inherited so much wealth and managed, like he lost casinos in Las Vegas. Like the casino always wins, but not when you're Donald Trump. Like he just seems like a weird parody of a loser, but yet the Republican base seem to adore him. Like what is it about him? Or is it just the fact he's quite sassy and cheeky on stage?
I mean, the Republicans have become kind of a party of weird losers. They used to be, you know, pride themselves as recently as the Bush administration on, you know, their propriety, their moral upstandingness, what have you. What that got them with tremendous power in 2000, 2008 was a world-shattering financial crisis and a series of lost wars. So I think that both the Republican Party and the American public more broadly, the sort of 80%, the bottom 80% of the country that has not benefited from the beautiful globalized world that I have certainly benefited from over the past 20 years, just sort of primed for a weird loser like Donald Trump, a weird loser who's kind of funny.
Because I could see going golfing with this guy before he was a politician. Like, I'm sure he'd be wild and he'd say outrageous things and it'd be a great time, but I wouldn't want him in charge of anything.
Well, I think enough people in the United States, and this is a sort of soul sickness that goes back to Watergate, Richard Nixon did to us. have just fallen further and further out of any respect or even consciousness of what government is supposed to be. This is a real problem that Ronald Reagan massively exacerbated. There are people, and I used to be one of them, in the United States who just aren't at all conscious of and are militantly against the idea that there are things that government can do, that society is a real thing, that we owe anything at all to each other. Like, and Donald Trump is the fruition, the parody of this. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't found it, but I'm sure it exists, that like Donald Trump was already a figure, a pretty ridiculous and loathed figure in the 1980s. He was a tabloid star, you know, his divorce from...
Well, wasn't Biff from Back to the Future based on him?
Wouldn't surprise me. That wouldn't surprise me at all. So maybe perhaps that's the example I'm looking for. But I gotta expect like just some pop culture from the 1980s talking about an out there crazy sci-fi dystopia where Donald Trump ended up as president. It's, you know, if you had, you couldn't write it any better, the epitaph of the Reagan Thatcher era, than to end up with Donald Trump. I think a lot of us who've had more fevered imaginings about Joe Biden, that he's in very, very small ways hinted towards, but it was, of course, disappointed idea. Oh, it's the new FDR. We're getting back to a completely new era of deep structural reform, blah, 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 which frankly, we need. Beyond the catastrophes, beyond his complete incapacity, beyond the fact that another 4 years of Donald Trump would probably mean out of control inflation during a war. Beyond all that, it's just a historical missed opportunity. Are we really going to spend another 4 years learning the lesson that was taught perfectly adequately by the period between January 2017 and January 2021? Like, this guy proved to us that sometimes you don't need a president, but sometimes you really, really do. And he has proved to us that he is utterly incapable of acting as a president. And that was going to be 5 to 8, you know, when he was 5 to 8 years younger.
Yes.
5 to 9 years younger.
Because these are, well, yeah. The only problem is with that argument, who he's up against isn't a young spring chicken themselves.
That's true. But, and he's also a genocidaire. So, yeah, what I would have said is like, but Joe Biden hasn't been the bad president. And, you know, before the genocide in Palestine, I actually have a case that Joe Biden hasn't been that bad a president. He has appointed some worthwhile people. There have been baby steps towards decent reforms. Unfortunately, he's also overseeing a massive remilitarization of Europe and a genocide in the Middle East. So it's harder for me to make that case.
Have you noticed Donald Trump just isn't as sharp as he used to be in these rallies?
I don't watch Donald Trump rallies.
Okay. He doesn't have the same pizzazz that he used to have.
It's unclear to me to what degree of that is sort of wish casting or what of that is true, which is honestly like it's clear to me that Joe Biden is older than he used to be and slower than he used to be. And Donald Trump is definitely older than he used to be and slower than he used to be.
Well, yeah, Biden definitely appears to be the eldest of the two by quite a far margin.
By more than the, what, 2, 3, or 4 years?
Yeah, I think it's 3 years, something like that.
Yeah. But I'm also well familiar with the fantasies that the hated and troublesome political figures. He's at death's door, so we won't have to worry about it. I remember when I moved to Turkey in 2009, people confidently asserted to me, well, you know, Erdogan's going to be dead in a year or two.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah, so it's been more than a year or two since 2009, Rory.
Yeah, the ones you want to die never do.
Indeed. I worry. I wish death on nobody, but I'd certainly wish a long, quiet retirement on Donald Trump.
In a farm somewhere.
Yeah. Farm upstate or something.
What could the Democrats do to ensure victory, in your opinion?
Well, not run Joe Biden. Be good. unfortunately, see, like, I think there's a reason why we ran Joe Biden Must Retire episode in, what, November, December, because that was a point at which it was a possibility. Now, by the time this runs, we're at the end of March. You still could replace Joe Biden, maybe in June, but we're getting down to the wire here.
It's kind of too late. I think within a year, it's like no.
I mean,
you're locked in.
It used to be. It used to be you didn't get real presidential candidates picked until July and August, and that was done at the conventions. Unfortunately, there's been an array of sort of reforms that, you know, probably a good thing, that have meant that it is now much harder to make those decisions at the conventions. You know, the votes are in, the delegates have been picked, this, that, and the other thing. So, yeah, I think we're pretty locked into Biden. So replacing Biden at the convention with anybody would be a great choice. Stopping the genocide in Palestine, which Biden could do immediately, would also be a good choice. I just saw something where there's something like 100 separate large-scale military sales to Israel since October 7th.
Wow.
Large-scale sales, many of which we're paying for.
Well, that's the horrible thing. I think it was Adam something, he's a YouTuber, was pointing out that, like, Ukraine is in an actual war with an actual enemy and actual front lines, and America's like, here's an old Bradley we don't need anymore, but we'll charge ourselves for a brand new one. And then when it comes to Israel, it's like, here's the brand new top of the range missiles to destroy some children with.
Yeah, that's a key point. Like, where we are sacrificing a lot, you know, not that we had a ton, but what moral or political credibility we had in the world.
Well, sadly, it reminded me of what happened with Russia is, I don't know, Russia had like a kind of reformed gangster vibe about it. It's like, oh, they're not bad anymore. They had a nice, you know, edge to them. And it was like, oh, they're not like that anymore. They're a good guy. They're a good guy. And then they do this and you go, oh, okay, they're as bad as we were told. And I feel America had a bit more of a, you know, professional edge to them. And then it's like, oh, they're not the bad guy anymore. And then it's like, oh, okay, no, they can just bring upon horror upon horrors on the world if they so wish.
Yep. Yep. And it just gets more and more mystifying by the by. We're recording this on March 6th. The Biden had promised last weekend or last week that we would have a ceasefire by this Monday that just passed. We sure don't. We sure don't.
The language is still very tame. It's tragically tame.
Yeah, and large scale starvation is happening.
What has Trump been saying about it in his rallies, or has that been brought up at all? Or
I think he's largely been avoiding it. I think people got very excited because in one of his rallies, he decided to take Netanyahu to task, not for anything that he's doing now, but because he was inadequately supportive when we tried to start a war with Iran over Qasem Soleimani murdering that guy.
Yeah, but you tend to want to start a war that you'll win, and Israel mightn't do so well because it's a lot closer to Iran than America is.
Yeah.
It always makes you think twice.
Yeah. Nice to know that there is some restraint in Netanyahu occasionally. I'm quite vocal on my Instagram accounts, both private and the More Freedom Foundation, about Israel-Palestine, and had somebody chime in today just simply saying, you know, what do you think, Trump's going to be better for the Palestinians? And I don't think Trump's going to be better for the Palestinians, but it's hard to see how he'd be worse. I mean, what is he going to send U.S. soldiers in there to?
I think it's possible that there's at least some sort of namby-pamby. Now, maybe you've had enough fun, Israel, while I think Trump might just say, yeah, do what you want. Do you want some more? Like, I think there could just be a, you know, yeah, do you want to finish this off? I'm not going to stop you.
Well, I think a point that folks have made is that if Trump were the one doing this, then you'd actually have some opposition from the New York Times, CNN, and the Democratic establishment.
Because everything Trump does is bad, according to them.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it in Yemen. Yemen was became, by the end of the Trump administration, there were even somewhat normie Democrats were beginning to talk about the horrors that we were unleashing on Yemen. And I think that this is a high salience enough issue that you'd actually see some real opposition to what's happening there. And honestly, you know, kind of the way that the second that, because keep in mind that Netanyahu desperately wants Donald Trump to be the U.S. president. When Ronald Reagan was elected president, the Iranians promptly released the hostages that had destroyed the Carter presidency. And yes. I wouldn't honestly be that surprised if we have an election where the ongoing genocide of Palestine continues to be a problem for Biden the entire time. And then on November 10th, Netanyahu calls Trump to congratulate him and announce a ceasefire.
So is this a common political tactic for U.S. presidents?
That wouldn't surprise me too much, because it's infinitely embarrassing to the U.S. president, no matter who that U.S. president is. George W. Bush, pretty nasty guy towards Arabs in general, the Middle East as a region, but was actually quite the contrast between George W. Bush and Joe Biden. When I think there's some email or communique, might be in the WikiLeaks, where George W. Bush, you know, is outraged at some Israeli prime minister for killing 8 Palestinians, you know, rather than hundreds daily. And keep in mind that Donald Trump is heavily, heavily paid by the Saudis. And the Saudis actually, I mean, the Saudi royal family doesn't like care deeply about the Palestinians, but they really don't like this, and they really don't want a Palestinian genocide. Yeah, some kind of like Trump wins, instant ceasefire, some kind of deal between Saudi Arabia and Israel. That would not surprise me in the slightest, because both Saudi Arabia and Israel desperately want to get rid of Joe Biden. So, or not necessarily Israel in general, but certainly this Israeli government.
Okay.
So yeah. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me much. So honestly, yeah, maybe if you want to save Palestinian lives, Trump presidency is the way to go.
Wow. So yeah. So Israel can steal land slowly again.
Yeah. Well, because they've already achieved taking over, I don't know, perhaps half of Gaza. I mean, one of the main bones of contention right now, the reason that the ceasefire negotiations stopped, was because the Hamas was like, we would like our refugees to be able to return to the northern half of Gaza that you just forced them out of. And Israel's like, nah, we're going to keep bombing, keep starving you. I think it's entirely plausible that this could probably at a slightly lower... Israel doesn't need to kill people with bombs as much anymore. It doesn't matter if the Congress stops the munitions at this. Well, it matters significantly, actually. But like they can just keep blocking the aid, and you know, hundreds and thousands of people will die.
As a contrast to Saudi Arabia, Israel is a complete, you know, military powerhouse in their own right. They have their own guns, they have their own tanks, you know, the Uzis, Israeli, like, they don't need, you know, infinite amounts of weapons from America. They can still do, you know, a lot themselves.
Oh, 100%, but my point is, at this point, to keep killing Palestinians and continue genociding, they don't need to bomb anymore. We're now getting to the point where mass starvation...
Because there was the footage of a lot of people being killed because they were swamping, like, aid trucks. So, yeah, it's just desperate scenes out there.
Yeah. So it is real Warsaw ghetto hours. It is quite savage and quite disgusting. And I can actually say that Donald Trump would be worse than that. So yeah.
Can I ask you a very controversial question? What during the Trump presidency did you like? Did you think, oh, that's actually a left ball thing I wouldn't expect a Republican to come out with?
I loved how he kept talking about getting U.S. troops out of Syria. That would have been a phenomenal idea. Every time he said it, I ran a video celebrating it. And it was never true. In fact, he's the guy who put permanent U.S. troops there. Absolutely, there were special forces, U.S. special forces all over Syria during the entirety of the Syrian civil war from 2011 through 2017 during the Obama administration. But it's Donald Trump who put permanent U.S. bases there whilst saying over and over again, I'm bringing the troops out of Syria. I loved that he talked about getting troops out of Syria. I loved, I still believe that Donald Trump and Joe Biden deserve a joint Nobel Peace Prize for getting the U.S. troops out of Afghanistan. I don't believe that anybody other than Donald Trump could have proposed getting the troops out of Afghanistan. I don't believe anybody other than Joe Biden could have actually finished that. Joe Biden was never going to propose getting the troops out of Afghanistan, but Joe Biden had the institutional knowledge and just sort of history with the Pentagon necessary to actually make it happen, and he made it happen. That is a joint accomplishment by the nightmarish Donald Trump and Genocide Joe that I think is very worthy, getting us out of Afghanistan.
But isn't the other thing with Trump is, as you say, quite often would talk one thing, but he would quite often just pass fairly normal Republican ideals. Like I was talking about how he's sort of a, you know, a failed mummy's boy, but the Republican Party at large still seem to be able to get what they want through. So, you know, on the face of it, he seems like a completely different left field. And in reality, it's like, oh yeah, we can still manipulate him and get what we want.
Well, one nice thing about him, actually, about his domestic policy is he stopped. The Republicans have been talking about cutting U.S. benefits for years, so they can bomb more places. This great J.D. Vance line about Nikki Haley saying, not a huge fan of J.D. Vance, this is a good line, saying that, you know, the Democrats are going to say that Nikki Haley just wants to cut your grandma's benefits and send the money overseas. And they're right. And they're right. And that's what the Republicans always wanted to do. They wanted, and Donald Trump, at no point did Donald Trump, nor do I believe will Donald Trump, introduce a measure for cutting Social Security or Medicare. That's also a very good thing and a good change to have introduced. What we need to cut is the Pentagon welfare queens, not
your grandmother.
Yeah, not my parents at this point, medical care. So, yeah.
So here's hoping that someone replaces Joe Biden and then they win the election so we don't have to talk about Trump anymore.
Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great? I think it is worth emphasizing that, no, like I, as much as I have come to detest Joe Biden and his choices in the Middle East, I still think Donald Trump would be worse, and that's worth saying.
Well, thank you for joining us on this important episode. We hope you'll catch us next time on the More Freedom Foundation podcast.
The More Freedom Foundation is also available on YouTube and TikTok. Rob's Twitter is Rob O'Law, and he's also written a book called Avoiding the British Empire, What It Was and How the US Can Do Better. And music provided by Kevin MacLeod.